Welcome, everybody, to another Thunder Buddies podcast. I'm Maddie Lee, joined by Joe Masato on the phone. He is in Oklahoma City. I am in Portland, where the Thunder has just beaten the Trailblazers 108-96, which is a wild turnaround from the game, Joe, that you saw here just a week and a half ago.
Yeah, I think, you know, we had completely different experiences in Portland. I saw a Thunder blowout with no defense. I mean, the Blazers blew the Thunder out, and you saw a game with all of the defense and a Thunder win.
Yeah, the difference had to have just been Lu Dort. That's it.
That's it. Yeah, Lu Dort. I mean, it's easy.
Yeah, you add Lu Dort,
you win.
No matter what. I mean, they are 2-0 in his only two NBA appearances. God, we just absolutely jinxed the guy. Sorry, Lou. Congratulations on the beginning of your NBA career.
But it's an impressive run, though. 2-0.
In all seriousness, last game we saw the Trailblazers make their first 12 shots. It was, and even I said this in that podcast too, on their 13th, Damian Lillard missed, but they still scored on that possession. Like, it was bad. And tonight, Chris Paul got a steal within the first couple of possessions. So it, like, complete turnaround. They limited Damian Lillard to just, and Damian Lillard didn't have a magical first half last time either, but they limited him to, I think it was 1 of 8. Yep, 1 of 8 in the first quarter. So
yeah,
huge.
Yeah, I mean, you just look at, I mean, it starts obviously with Lillard, 8 of 24. You mentioned his first quarter stats. He was 2 of 12 from three. And in the last Portland game, I mean, I wrote about Carmelo Anthony's breakout. I mean, it was just like the feel good story. He was 4 of 18. CJ McCollum was 8 of 21. I mean, those three guys who they need to play well to win because they don't have a lot of depth right now, they combined to shoot 32%.
Yeah, and that, I mean, I think Damian Lillard talked about frustration and how they post game and how they didn't come out with the right energy, but to the Thunder's credit, they did. they absolutely came out with the right energy. And they had a bunch of guys take turns on those two. I mean, primarily you saw, you know, the typical guards. You had Shea and Dennis Schroeder and Chris Paul. But then also, right, like we mentioned, Lu Dort ended up he played 14 minutes tonight because yet again the Thunder had depth issues at the wing. Essentially the same guys as were out last game were out tonight. This time, obviously, Deontay Burton wasn't still serving that one game suspension, and Billy Donovan was adamant pregame that him going to the blue had nothing to do with that. And, you know, the altercation that reportedly was the reason that he was suspended, he said, we're done with that. And it's really all about developing these young guys. And he just wasn't getting that much playing time, essentially, with the Thunder. And so he's been getting a lot of playing time when he goes down to the blue. And according to Billy Donovan, that was the reason for sending him to the blue, even when the Thunder has very few wings at this point. And so they brought both of their two-way players on this trip. And they wouldn't have been able to do that if Lu Dort hadn't shown how defensively impressive he can be, even in the few minutes that he got last game.
Yeah, that's really interesting what you said about Burton. I hadn't seen that from Billy. I mean, if it's true, let's just say it's hard to believe with the timing. And also, Burton hadn't been sent down to the G League all season.
Oh, he'd had two other He's played two games with the Blue.
Okay, my bad. My mistake then. I did not realize that. So, but it coincides with Lou Dort playing well. I mean, it's at least opened an opportunity for Lou Dort, not just the Burton thing, but Terrence Ferguson being a little banged up with the hip soreness, with Diallo obviously out. Like you said, they're short on wings. And, like, you know, he's similar to Burton in that he's, like, a big-bodied guy who's strong, but he's got just a ton of athleticism, a ton of speed. I mean, just the way he fought around screens tonight, chasing guys like Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum. It's his third game he's been active in, his second game he's actually played in, and he was getting two of the toughest covers in the league tonight in Lillard and McCollum, and it wasn't just him on them, but those guys go 8 of 21 and 8 of 24. He at least played a big part in that.
Yeah, that's wild for your second ever NBA game. He played with Thunder in the preseason, so I like jokingly asked him about travel after the game. He's like, well, I did it in preseason. But I mean,
this is different.
Also, they went to Dallas. And yeah. So anyways, he did a really admirable job on both CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard, and that's been a strength of his through college. We mentioned that, but for him to prove it against, you know, one of the most cohesive backcourts in the league is huge. And for the Thunder to, I mean, granted, they're not a team who, even though we'll get to the standings, but we're not a team who we expect to be really, you know, making a playoff push at the end of the year. But still, they don't want to look terrible. And so the fact that they are trusting him off the bench, and Billy Donovan even said that he considered potentially even starting him, and then he went back and he was like, no, you know, like, Abdul Nader played well, we want to keep him in there, but just matchup wise he was thinking, hey, maybe we can put Lou Dort in the starting lineup and have that defensive presence. He ended up going with Abdul Nader, and I think, you know, and well deserved. Abdul, he had, you know, has his ups and downs like any young player, and is, you know, more offensively accomplished than Lou Dort. But in two games, Lou Dort has shown that he already, as an undrafted free agent in his rookie year, and he only played 1 year of college, is a formidable defender, even when he hasn't, you know, played any of these guys or know any of their tendencies or anything like that, other than studying film. And that's where he's starting. So he could be a really exciting player in months and years to come.
Yeah, I mean, and even though Nader got the start, Nader played 19 minutes, 26 seconds. Lou Dort was 19:51, so just shy of 20. He actually played a little bit more than Nader did. And I think that kind of shows you how much Billy Donovan and the staff values defense. I mean, we've talked about so much how they're just down on defensive wings from years past. And Lou Dort, like, you know, everyone says no rookie is really good at defense in the NBA. But, like, at least in his first couple games, he's shown to be quite competent on that end of the floor. His shot's not quite there yet, 0 of 3 from 3. He was shooting it okay from 3 in the G League, I think, like, 35%. But he's really not in there to score. I mean, I think they want him to take open threes, but just the defense he adds, the energy, you know, I watched your video from Chris Paul in the locker room. He kind of gave him a shout out after the game. It looks like guys are really impressed by what he's added.
Yeah, definitely. And he would have played more if he hadn't fouled out.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I used
all six of them.
I'm not surprised that he fouled out when you're playing against guys as as accomplished as Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, they're going to draw fouls. And especially when you're a player who doesn't know them and their tendencies. But, you know, still very impressive effort. Obviously room to grow on that front, but props to Lou Dort. Okay. let's switch unless you have anything else to add, make this a little more than just the Lou Dort podcast.
I was going to move on from Dort and just, you know, the Jason Quick from The Athletic tweeted out that the Blazers 36% from the field, that was their lowest. Their points were their lowest. So it wasn't just Dort. It was really the whole defense. It was just an all around good defensive performance. And you have to think it kind of, you know, they were probably a little motivated by the Blazers just crushing them offensively in the last game in Portland. And this was one of the more cohesive defensive performances we've seen this year from the Thunder.
Definitely against a team that obviously before has steamrolled them.
Yeah.
On that end, switching gears, probably the most impressive, or definitely the most impressive offensive performance from the Thunder early in the game came from Chris Paul, who finished the night with 20, but had 16, I believe, by halftime. And he was really just able to, and I tweeted this out, like, good players should be able to take advantage of mismatches, but when he gets a mismatch, like, there's one moment that I can think of where he missed a shot over Hassan Whiteside. But other than that, like, and that, I was shocked. Like, that's how good he is at taking advantage of those mismatches, is you expect him to score.
Yeah, and, you know, he really powered the Thunder in that second quarter run. I thought when they got up to that 18-point lead, 49-31, he had consecutive three-pointers. He did a really good job on the pick and roll when he got when bigger guys and Carmelo got switched onto him. He really welcomed those matchups. And, man, it's just like every game he gets into that soft spot in the paint. He loves that free throw line area. He loves that fadeaway jumper. And it was working tonight. And he had turned in, you know, it was a couple games ago, I was looking up, oh, wow, has Chris Paul, like, ever had a game where he didn't score? And then he dropped 30 in his last game. And tonight he was great from the floor as well. So it's Chris Paul is, you know, not that the league needs a reminder, but I think performances like these kind of remind everyone he still has a lot in the tank.
Yeah, you mentioned those Carmelo Anthony matchups. Obviously, we've talked about one of his good friends in the league, but early on, he had a moment where he got switched on to him, and he just absolutely embraced that matchup, and he was crossing him over and dribbling around, and then took a contested step back jumper and made it. It was just like, oh, yep, there he goes. That's Chris Paul.
Yeah, it was one of those classic Chris Paul games that we've seen. You know, 7 of 17. The final numbers on hand, 7 of 17, 2 of 6 from three. They don't look as good as I thought he played. And maybe that's stunted a little bit by how great he was in the first half and maybe didn't get it going as much in the second half. I mean, the Thunder only shot 41%, 34 from three. So, like, not great by their standards. But, again, that defense, they didn't need all that offense tonight. But the offense that did come, Chris Paul and the other point guards, Dennis Schroeder, and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, especially in that fourth quarter when he had, 14 points, I think, in the quarter.
Yeah, he finished out really strong.
They were both good.
But the third quarter was when things got a little scary. Because for the Thunder.
We've heard that before.
Right? Because Chris Paul played so well in the second, and they got, you know, led by as many as 18 points. And then Damian Lillard woke up and he had 16 points in the quarter, and like midway through it looked like it was going to be another of those Thunder performances where they get beat in the third, and that's it, you know?
Yeah. I just think it might be a depth issue. Like, you know, Lillard was great in that third quarter. Dame time came a little early. Like, it just seemed like the Blazers ran out of gas a little bit. And, you know, you wrote about it in the journal, but they just lost Rodney Hood on Friday to an Achilles injury. And that hurts their offense so much. I mean, he had started every game. They're giving minutes to guys who wouldn't normally play. And, like, when I watch the Blazers, there's so much pressure on Lillard and McCollum. And, like, Lillard totally embraced that in the third quarter. But, gosh, it's just going to be hard for them to sustain playing that way, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and then we saw fourth quarter, the Thunder. Shai said that they adjusted to really get up on Lillard more and continue to give him more, you know, throw different guys at him, keep him off balance. Mm-hmm. Billy Donovan kind of attributed it to just like Lillard missing shots, not necessarily anything that they did. But he only scored a couple more points in the fourth quarter. So Thunder was able to stop the bleeding, which we haven't necessarily seen from them all the time. And it started before the quarter ended. They only got outscored in the third by a few points. And so they were still in good shape heading into the fourth, as opposed to all the games we've seen where they dig themselves into such a hole that the fourth is all about them trying to drag themselves back. And it's like, no, they did most of the work for that there. And then they were able to just kind of run away with the lead.
Yeah, this was a kind of a new game script tonight. Like, they outscored the Blazers 26-18 in the fourth. And it, as you wrote about, you know, Portland fans started leaving early. That's something that that we haven't seen before. Usually, yeah. It's such a close game. Everyone's standing up and going crazy because the Thunder are trying to mount a comeback after getting in a third quarter hole. But they kind of withstood that charge from the Blazers in the third and then really controlled much of the fourth quarter until it wasn't a game for the final few minutes.
So we've already talked about Chris Paul, but we did not mention...
Oh, this is my favorite part of the night.
an interesting parallel story. Go ahead and take it away for us, Joe.
Yeah, so, I mean, the Thunder... Two nights after they benefited from two delay of games, the second of which was a technical leading to a free throw, and you guys know how that one ended against Minnesota. Tonight, you know, they didn't show it on the broadcast. Like, they didn't show the scores table or, like, what the delay of games were for, but obviously got into the two delay of games, and you're like, wow, like, you know, how often does that happen where a team is called for two delay of games in the first half, and like clearly I thought, okay, they're trying to send a message here. And then Chris Paul also clearly thought that, and you know, I forgot what some of his quote was explicit, but he said that the officials were, oh, you're trying to prove a point, you're going to be on SportsCenter tonight. Good job. So like Chris Paul was not having it. And then you talked to him about it after the game.
Yeah, he tried to avoid getting fined, but he said, he was like, yeah, he got me. So it had something to do with his warm up pants. He said that the explanation he got was that he couldn't be wearing both his warm up pants and his warm up shirt. Billy Donovan said the explanation he got was that he couldn't be wearing his warm-up pants when he stepped on the floor. Unclear.
and there's zero chance that if Friday doesn't unfold the way it does, that they get called twice for those. Like, I don't buy it. Like, I think it's funny. I'm not upset or anything. I just think it's, like, totally a game that, you know, Chris Paul has had beef with so many officials. And I think this crew, which is a totally different crew that called that game, mm-hmm. I think they defended Scott Foster and that crew when everyone was like, oh, they only called it because Chris Paul wanted them to. And I think they clearly got Chris Paul back tonight.
Yeah, I mean, they were, those two calls were in such quick succession.
Yeah.
It seemed pretty blatant.
Pretty bold move by the officials.
Yeah. I'm sure, I mean, you'd expect that was something that they talked about pregame.
Yeah. Yeah, they clearly paid attention to the goings-on of Friday. So that game within the game and Chris Paul sort of laughing it off and, you know, walking out because he doesn't want to get fined. I thought that was so funny.
It was wild. I mean, and yeah, he did. He walked off and then was like, "Well, we have other questions," and he came back. It was a nice little dramatic
moment. I like how he was asking for like, isn't there a pool reporter? Or like, where's the pool reporter?
I know. Well, in retrospect, we should have made clear to someone that we would like a pool reporter to ask those questions, but I wasn't ready to offer to be the pool reporter. So
yeah, you had other things to focus on.
I hoped that the home team would take care of it, and that was less of a storyline for them than it was for us.
Yeah, the pool reporters notably did not mention Chris Paul after Friday, so I think he clearly had seen that. I just, you know, the whole thing, like, Chris Paul is one of the best things covering this team is like dealing with him, and like, as a veteran, he just handles himself so differently than some of the young guys, and like, just knows everything about how the league operates, and he's just kind of a genius at maneuvering all of that.
Yeah, he's very specific about the things that he says and how he says them, and
yeah,
if he ran for public office someday, he'd have all the tools to navigate that.
Yeah.
So the Thunder.
He might.
Oh,
he might.
That be fascinating. We'd love to cover that.
The Chris Paul campaign.
Yeah. 100%. Okay, so the Thunder improved to 10-12. Turns out, with all these injuries and stuff, the West is not doing as hot in this first quarter of the season as we expected them to do. And so at 10-12, the Thunder is tied record-wise with two other teams, three-way tie, with the Suns and the Timberwolves. And if the season were to end today, they'd be in the playoffs.
That's crazy. I mean, it's either they're in this weird middle ground of it's like either tanking gone wrong, or it's like, wow, they could have a legit shot at the 8 seed. I mean, 10-12 are the Thunder, the Suns, and the Timberwolves tied for that 7th spot. So if you look at the 6 teams above, Lakers, Clippers, Mavericks, Rockets, Nuggets, Jazz, all of those teams, I think it's fair to say, are locks for the playoffs. 7, 8, 9, 10 through whatever, Thunder, Suns, Timberwolves, Kings, Spurs, Blazers, you have a mixture of like young teams who didn't expect to make the playoffs, like the Thunder and the Suns. Timberwolves, Kings were maybes before the season. Spurs, Blazers, Warriors way down there, were thought to have made the playoffs, and they're obviously, we know what the Blazers are. They're 9-15, 2 games back of the Thunder. Spurs are 9-14. I think the Spurs and Blazers are still teams with obvious playoff aspirations, but you look at it and it's like there's 2 spots for the taking, and the Thunder are in that mix, which is, it's still way early, but it's kind of crazy to think about.
Yeah. I think we're all assuming that they're going to make some trades and fall out of that. But yeah, we all expected the Warriors to be a playoff team, and they've got hit so hard by injuries, and they're at the bottom of the league. And
yeah, just like the Blazers.
Yeah, and the Blazers, we all like thought that they'd be very thoroughly in the race. I still think the Spurs will. They just somehow always make the playoffs.
They're the Spurs. Like
it's like it's hard for them not to make the playoffs. So I think they'll make a bit of a run here, and we'll see if the Suns are actually good. But I mean, they've had a good new chapter.
Yeah. They're 3-7 in their last 10.
A bunch of former assistants on the coaching staff.
Yeah. I am not, I mean, I think the Suns, I mean, that the organization has just been floundering for so many years under bad ownership. But, you know, they have a chance. But currently constructed, I think the Thunder has a better roster than the Suns, Timberwolves, and maybe Kings. I'm kind of high on the Kings. They had such a bad start to the season, playing a little better now. But like you said, the key is we don't expect this to be the roster come playoff time. Like if you know, Sam Presti came out tomorrow, which he would never do, and said we're standing pat, we're making a run at it, I think the Thunder would have like a legitimate shot at the 7 or 8 seed. But that's not the direction the franchise is at least expected to go. But
it would not be a smart way for the franchise to go. That would be forfeiting. I mean, the way I see it, if they were to just be like, all right, let's stand pat, let's do this, they'd just be very mediocre for the next several years, as opposed to, you know, probably getting worse, but then almost definitely getting worse, but then being able to turn that into something, as opposed to just being mediocre for a long time.
Yeah, I think the thing that they don't want to do is if they're stuck in that middle ground and they either need to lose or like it feels dumb saying this because I don't think they're gonna try to make a run, but they either need to lose or try to make a run. Like if they finish, you know, 39-43 and that's like 9th in the West or 10th in the West, I don't think that's good, because you miss the playoffs, you miss that extra revenue and exposure. National TV games helps the local economy. You like miss that stuff from a guaranteed 2 playoff home games, but you also miss having a chance. Now, even with the flattened lottery odds, I don't think you want to finish like 9th. I think you want to finish like 11th or 12th.
Yeah, they're flattened, but not that flat.
Yeah, like 10-12 is, I think it's fair to say, better than we expected at this point.
Yeah, and a lot of those losses have been super close and super competitive.
Yeah, still a rough. You're at the very beginning of your West Coast swing here, so. The Thunder's record could look a lot different a week from now.
Yeah, very tough road trip. Utah tomorrow, so probably when you guys are listening to this, very soon. And then it's kind of back and forth between Mountain and Pacific time, but Portland, Utah, Sacramento, Denver. All good teams. You know, Sacramento's the break, if you want to call it that. All influencing your standing in the West.
Yeah, that Sacramento game, that'll be two teams that are in that clump that we just talked about who have a chance for that 8 seed. So that'll be an interesting game. And yeah, Utah tomorrow, I mean, they're 9-2 at home, so they've had kind of a bumpy start to the year because, you know, I thought they could be fight for the, you know, maybe 2 seed because they kept so many of their guys and then added Mike Conley. But that'll be a tough one. So we'll see how it goes. But it's just kind of funny to think now in early December, the West isn't as strong as we thought it was going to be. And 10-12 is your 7th seed.
Indeed. All right. Well, with that, probably time to wrap it up since we will see you guys in a few hours. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Thunder Buddies podcast. Like it, love it, share it, subscribe. Share it with your friends, your family, your enemies, your pets, your neighbors, your extended family, and nuclear family. And we will see you tomorrow, aka Monday, after Thunder at Jazz.